This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
8:36 in the morning, you're listening to The Morning Run. It's Thursday, November the 25th. I'm Shazana Mokhtar, together with Philip C. and Kusu Chuang. We're talking about inflation. Have you been shopping for your groceries lately only to notice that food prices have shot up dramatically? For the past 2 weeks, cauliflower prices have shot up by more than 100%, from 7 ringgit to 16 ringgit per kg, while another Malaysian staple has increased from 3 ringgit to 9 ringgit per kg.
I think you're referring to choy sum.
There we go.
And it's not just vegetables, but chicken has also increased to around 10 ringgit from the previous range of RM ringgit and above. Now, the Consumer Association of Penang, CAP President Muhyiddin Abdul Kadir, said prices of some vegetables have increased by almost 200%. Now, due to a confluence of many external factors like extreme weather, rising energy prices, labor shortages, and supply chain disruptions caused by the pandemic.
Yeah, but such sudden prices have put pressure on some households which are already struggling to make ends meet due to COVID. So how can the government address these inflationary pressures? And I think, more importantly, what are the causes for it?
So for some thoughts on this, we have with us Carmelo Ferlito, CEO of the Centre for Market Education. Good morning, Carmelo. Always good to have you. So in Malaysia, to control prices, there are price caps on many items, from petrol pump prices to basic food items. Do you think price controls are an effective means of maintaining price stability? And should the government be looking at this measure in response to the price rise that we're seeing right now?
Well, you see, I think that the situation is much more complicated. The fact that certain items may become at a certain point in time unaffordable, or that in the market it emerged a discoordination between supply and demand, is a signal. It's a signal that something is wrong in the production structure of the country, that can be due to exogenous shock, but I think in this case we also don't have to forget the role of monetary expansion that we have experienced during the pandemic. If we apply price controls, we may have a temporary relief, but it is a relief that eliminates the incentive for entrepreneurs and consumers to take those decisions that will have the production structure to realign to the consumer preferences, and therefore to market signals. So price controls are somehow a way to cover market signals, and in the long run, they will have the structural issues to remain in the economy, and meanwhile, we would have lost precious time to solve that structural issues that can be solved precisely only if market forces can interact and communicate.
Yeah, but Carmelo, if you say price shocks might be ineffective, and of course, if you allow market shocks to allow market forces to pervade the economy, which some households cannot stomach, then what might work ostensibly?
Well, I think that at least to address the supply side shock that we have experienced during the lockdown period, we have a few possibility of actions. And first of all, is to introduce special trade corridors, so to allow external supply to reach faster and cheaper the country. This is one point. And the other point is to reopen also to the hiring of foreign workers that are very much needed by the country. But to these two points, I would add another general point, which is confidence. So during lockdowns, many businesses closed down, others had to scale down to survive, and this has created the supply side shocks that we are experiencing. So it is very fast to scale down or to close down the economy, but it is much more long and complicated to get those businesses back at the measures and the size that they had before the pandemic. And businesses will start to scale up again only if they have confidence that the situation is somehow back to normal. Otherwise, they will remain in a prudent mode, on a wait and see rather than investing again.
How does one build confidence then to scale up? Because that is one of the key structural challenges here, isn't it? And that's why we have this discussion whether or not this is permanent or transitory. If we want to make this transitory, we do need to make sure that we can scale up sooner rather than later, isn't it?
Yes. So for regarding confidence, we can see what is happening in Europe, basically, with the pandemic the number of infections rising again and new lockdowns coming in again. And many businesses that started to get ready for the Christmas season became frustrated. So this is a scenario that we must avoid. And if, as it has been repeated many times over the past 2 years, the critical issue is the stress over ICUs and medical facilities, we have to invest there. Stop spending money in subsidies and invest money where they are needed so that we can avoid lockdowns and we can avoid to invest in subsidies again. So this, I think, is the critical issue that we need to look at to rebuild confidence. On the issue of transitory inflation, if you allow me, there is a part of the inflation that we are experiencing that is definitely transitory, and this is the one related to the supply side shocks. But most of the extraordinary inflation that we see arising around the world, and in particular in this moment in the US and in Germany, is not due to supply side shock, but to monetary expansion. Money supply grew at a very accelerated speed during the past 2 years because of expansionary fiscal and monetary policies. And the only way that we have to address this is to implement a plan of spending cuts. We have no other choice. It has to be gradual, and yet it will be painful, because the part of inflation that remains with us and is going to create big issues for employment is the inflation that comes from excess money in the system.
And speaking of monetary policy, we see that central banks globally are now changing their tune, and there is talk of tightening it. I guess, what do you think will be the impact, given that we've seen more than a decade of cheap money? Is tightening the way to go for central banks at the moment?
I don't think so. If we talk about interest rate, strictly speaking, because indeed we need investment if we want the supply chain to come back and to rebalance the growing demand around the world. So an increase in interest rate, despite not being so automatic, but can frustrate new investments. Instead, central banks can stop buying government bonds and financing government debt in this way. That is where I think it would be beneficial, a change in monetary policy, but not on the interest rate. But let me repeat, the best way that we have now to cool down monetary pressures is with spending cuts.
And Carmelo, in Malaysia's instance, right, with overnight policy rates at 1.75% at record lows, what should Malaysia's interest rate policy be? And of course, with a view, of course, to the recent uptrend, or rather downtrend, in the Malaysian ringgit versus the dollar.
I think that most probably Bank Negara will raise the interest rate in the near future. These are the rumors that we hear from many directions, but I don't think that is the way to go. Not at least in the very short term.
Carmelo, thanks very much for speaking to us this morning. That was Carmelo Ferlito, CEO for the Center for Market Education, giving us his thoughts on how to deal with inflationary pressures in Malaysia. His prescription would be to reduce government spending.
Yeah, but that's going to be troublesome, because we are coming out of this pandemic. We've just seen Budget 2022 being announced at the highest ever on record. Malaysia has no choice but to spend. It seems a bit of a catch-22 situation in the best Joseph Heller definition, but we're caught between a rock and a hard place in terms of the spending.
Well, this is the problem, isn't it, about the issue about rising food prices here. And I think Carmelo draws the distinction that the situation in Malaysia is very different from the US and Europe, where there has been a lot of stimulus and expansionary approach towards their budgets and spend, which is actually why it's driving inflation. Whereas for us here, there is a bit more of a supply chain concern and constriction here, which is driving higher prices.
And today we were asking you on our Twitter account, we had a poll running asking how has the increased price of food affected you? And 57% of you said that because of the price increases in food, you've spent less on other items. So food takes up the bulk of and most people's budget. 20% said that you changed your diet. So perhaps you either spent less or ate less, or you spent on cheaper items.
Yeah, and of course, I've also seen anecdotally a lot of people going to hotels, because they can't travel abroad. So I guess in net terms, if you can't travel to, say, Bangkok, you spend less money in Malaysia, chuti-chuti Malaysia, which can be a good thing, I guess, in a cyclical sense.
Well, that's an interesting point because, that discussion, it's where I think the top 10% of the population with disposable cash will look at. When you look at this poll, it really reflects, I think, what the middle 40 and bottom 40 are struggling. They have very tight budgets. They don't know what to do. They have higher food expenditure. There's only one option. I just have to spend less on other things, which is a bit disappointing and sad.
It is. The issue with rising food prices is, does it put nutritious food out of bounds for a segment of the population? In the end, are we just going to resort to eating Maggi because that's the cheaper option out there rather than having something nutritious and balanced and, a better diet?
Which is the issue on the higher prices on vegetables. I think that is what is causing so much consternation.
That's right. Stay tuned to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.